Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 90 minutes down, 90 minutes to go here on TSN 1290, the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. Why do you become an accountant? It is simply a good life decision. The old stereotype that accountants are nothing more than bean-counting, number-crunching introverts simply no longer applies. The CGA Professional Accounting Designation opens doors of unlimited career opportunity and financial reward. The Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. For more information, give them a call at 204-477-1256 or go to their website at www.cga-manitoba.org. Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. We see more than numbers. Gentlemen, we've had another couple people drop off a present. They got their IC. They got an IC hat.
We've got one left.
One left.
One hat left.
So one more person can win that hat.
That's right.
We got to mention, though, it's a 7.5 hat size. So hopefully
you got a big. Gotta have the big.
You know what?
Is it, Colin? 7 3/8.
7 3/8. Colin tells us that's the hat size. So if you have a big head and you're looking for a new hat, bring us an unwrapped toy over to the TSN 1290 booth here. You'll give you an Illegal Curve hat, and I guess they get a ballot to enter into some of the great draws we have going on as well. There you go. Colin's got the ballot in his hand. So we're down here at the St. Vitale Center Food Hall, 30th annual Christmas Miracle in support of the Christmas Cheer Board. Guys, what was I going to say? What did I say before
the break?
I'm
pretty sure we were talking about the players and whether or not they're unified.
Right. That's right. Exactly right. Adrian Dater, Denver Post columnist, writes for...
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. Also writes
for
Sports.
Tried to get him on today.
Yeah. Also writes for Sports Illustrated. Tweeted on Thursday night that he had been in contact with sort of a third, fourth line player who said that the players were prepared to take a vote and accept the offer as the NHL had presented it on Thursday night. Do you, A, believe that?
Yeah.
And B, do you believe that the NHLPA is as unified as they would have you believe?
I don't think it's as unified as they'd have us believe. I think if you did put it to a vote, I think it'd be pretty close. I really do think it would be close. I think if you know, Don Cherry said it, if you have a bunch of guys in a room, it's hard to come up and say vote yes when everybody else is saying vote no.
Right.
I think eventually in any event, if it comes down to the deadline hunting and it's between no season and season, Don Ophir has to put it to a vote to see what the majority of players want, because you don't represent the top 10 players, you represent the bottom 10 players as well and everybody in between. So you have to take that into account. Now, they haven't agreed to a deal yet. Fine. I mean, December 15th is the next paycheck. If they agreed to the deal, what's to December 6th? If they wouldn't have started the season by December 15th, but they would have got 60 games in, so they probably would have changed. They would have changed the way the schedule paid out the salaries, right?
Right.
But now half a season.
Yeah.
So you've given up probably 12 games, and that's money. And again, I don't think the bargaining that the things you're haggling over are worth that amount of money. In any event, I think that leads, Drew, into the point, because the bottom players have more limited careers. The bottom players say, what do I care about contract length? Aside from the Brandon Press, who somehow get four-year contracts, nobody's giving these guys 6 or 7 or 8-year deals. So they're thinking to themselves, that's never going to affect me. But you know what's going to affect me? The money I'm losing right now.
Sure.
My career is probably going to be shorter than the guys, because Eric DeHatrick made a great point this week. The guys who sign the long-term deals, if they get shortened, the truth is, they get a lot of money anyhow.
Right.
After the next deal, because they're the best players. So
is this a contract for the higher-end player, or is this a negotiation that benefits the highest-end players, or is this a negotiation that benefits the bottom-end players?
I think the issues right now are more so the higher-end rather than the lower-end.
See, I don't agree with that.
And the rank and file are the lower-end, so why aren't they up in arms? How long does this brotherhood atmosphere last, if it hasn't already started to
I think it's
separate.
Different, with the owners and that. The owners are all individually wealthy for the most part, and so they come in and they all kind of feel confident enough because they've been leaders and because they've owned to kind of voice their opinion. And it may not get through to the media, but I think all owners are more confident in voicing their opinions, as opposed to the third liner on, Nashville, who gets up and there's a bunch of players yelling at him, and I don't think his voice is as respected as much.
Jim Slater, Winnipeg Jets player, was quoted in today's Winnipeg Free Press. He was skating at the Iceplex yesterday. And you could sort of read between the lines of Jim Slater's comments, or at least this is how I perceived it. He's a guy who is one of those, third, fourth line players. He signed his 3-year deal last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably going to be the biggest contract he gets. His next contract, I can't imagine, is going to be as big as the one he signed this past offseason. he's a guy who's probably It's his last big deal. You know, what was it? 3 years, $4.5 million, something like that.
Yeah, 1.9 or 1.8 a year.
Yeah, maybe it was 1.9. Maybe it was 3 years, $5.7 million, something like that. He's hard pressed to sign another contract that's going to be close to $2 million a year. So he's a guy that's losing money. That it's hard to believe that a guy like Jim Slater doesn't want to get back on the ice, because that's money that, you know, if you're the top end guys, you got a lot of money. You're getting, you know, if you lose out on $8 million this year, it's not the end of the world. You're getting $8 million next year.
Fair enough, Drew. But you know, this is my issue with this whole unification and
1.6 a year for Slater.
1.6.
So my whole issue with this whole are the players unified or the hard line owners versus the soft line owners. This is how it is. Because I know how it is.
Right.
Donald Fehr is the guy who makes the decisions for the NHLPA, and of course the guys that, you know, make less money and that are fourth line guys and have, you know, a smaller shelf life to make money, you're probably right. They want to get on the ice more so than the guy that's got 9 years left at $6 million a year. But for these guys, for Jim Slater, if you want to use him as an example, or if it's a Chris Barch.
What about Tanner Glass?
These guys don't want to put themselves in front of everybody else and say, hey, you know, you guys are the stars. You guys are going to make way more money than me. I think it's the way it's framed I have an issue with, because really everybody wants the best deal for the NHLPA at the base of everything. The star players.
Sure, you want best deal. At what expense, though? When does the expense for the for the middling players become too much?
And that's
they
why
rise
the point
up?
Is, if a guy loses a half season when he's only going to make $2 million more in his career, there's a point. I'm not going to disagree with you on that one, Drew. But I think it's not as simple as, you know, the 200 or so third and fourth liner guys in the NHL to speak up. I mean, that's obviously, you know, it works like that, but it's also, these guys are all trying to not break. They're all, that's why you see all the guys on Twitter, you know, they all say the same
stuff in general, right? It's bullying tactics.
Exactly.
Though.
And that's why it's, you know, you talk about the hard line owners and the soft line owners, I guess. It's a tough situation because these guys want to play, but they know that, okay, you know, Donald Fehr thinks we can get a little bit better of a deal here if we wait two or three more weeks. So again, Drew, I agree with you that, you know, the guys that make less money and that have less years left in the NHL.
But it goes both ways, guys, because, you know, Ron Hainsey is the same situation. He's on his last big deal. He's not going to make that money back. And
that's why I'm surprised that he's as vocal and active as
Look what happens, Richie, Roman Hamrlik puts himself... Right. The individual in front of the collective, look what happens.
Yeah.
They rip him.
Well, and that's a problem, because I think
that's
he should be entitled to whatever.
But
you know,
again, Drew, in your defense, to back up your argument, if 50 of them do it, then it's easier for 50 of them. They're not going to all get blasted.
I agree.
So your point is it's. I think that, you know, these negotiations are so complicated. They're not complicated in the sense that really it comes down to a few issues, player contracting rights and how to divide, you know, billions of dollars. But when you're holding out for a better deal and you've got some guys saying it's a good deal and then a few of the other guys saying, you know what, we can probably get a little bit better than this. It's tough. How do you...
And again, the question is, what does it cost to get the better deal and how much is it worth? So how much?
Right.
Or can you just get in there right now and split the difference and call it a day, which is, I think, the way they should go. Steve Fehr should call Bill Daly and say, hey, we'll split the difference on that. Let's go.
And you're probably right. But you know what they're probably doing? It's like we said at the top of the show. They're deadline hunting.
Right.
They're deadline hunting. Yeah. They figure at this point in time, and I mean, you know, what are they losing? They're losing another paycheck. But at this point in time, or maybe two paychecks given whenever this deal gets done, they're waiting to see, you know, is the NHL... We're willing to sacrifice those last two paychecks to see if the NHL offer improves anymore. I don't think it will, but... I mean, you know, do you think that who's going to blink?
They'll have to split the difference.
You think it's going to be that simple?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I hope you're right. I mean,
I've been wrong so many times in this process. So.
Well, we thought this wouldn't have lasted this long, and we keep moving our dates.
As it said, you know, you talk about both sides, and both sides, you know, egos involve all those things. They could have easily come to this agreement that they're going to reach in August or September if they wanted to, but of course. You know, and again, would they have got less in a negotiation maybe with Paul Kelly? You could argue yes or no. People would probably say probably would have got less. But the question is, the money they've lost, $500 million, whatever it is, in salaries.
Yeah.
The question is, however much it is.
Is it worth it?
Is it worth it?
Well, and that's it. Just, you know, Donald Fear might be able to get a great deal for you on December 30th or December 31st. But is it a great enough deal that it makes up for all the money you lost in the lead up to December 31st by not signing by not coming to a mutually beneficial agreement on September 15th?
And that's, you know, who knows, right? And that's selfish versus unselfish, I guess, in a sense. But at the same time, who knows what the owners are going to demand next time? Maybe it doesn't matter what the agreement is. Because people need to understand one thing. Collective bargaining, you know, they base it off of the former agreement. But there's actually no need to do that. I mean, the NHL could come up with a completely different system and start negotiating off of that if they want to.
It's a brand new beast.
It's a brand new beast. So when people say, oh, they're giving back. They're giving back based on the former agreement. But in terms of the negotiation process, they're not actually giving back anything. It's a new deal. If the owners don't think they can make it work on that, then they're the owners and they can shut it down. So people have to keep that in mind. I mean, they're negotiating off of an old deal to make it easier, but they're not actually giving back something.
Right,
so
and that's why the rhetoric is so frustrating, Richie, because it's each side saying give and take. They might as well stop saying give and take, because if that's the case, Drew, then why don't you talk about all the fans that are giving all their money?
They don't care about the fans. They should, but the fans have proven that they'll always come back. And until the fans, you know,
we'll see this time
don't
around.
Come back, then it's not going to be an issue whatsoever.
We'll see this time around.
We'll see, but I think they're still going to come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the 30th Annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive from St. Vitale Center Food Hall in support of the Christmas Cheer Board. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly before, about 10 minutes, 12 minutes before 2 o'clock here at the 30th Annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. We're live at the St. Vitale Center Food Hall. All proceeds for today's event go to the Christmas Cheer Board. Big thank you to Tim Hortons. They came by with some lunch for us. You know, make sure we're well-fueled for the last hour of the show. Ken and the team at the newest Tim Hortons, 935 Headmaster Row, the corner of Lajimodier. Some great, we have some paninis now. You guys are eating some cookies.
Right.
I know Richard
enjoys
the cookies.
Turned down the cookie. Shelley Smith-Hines, who obviously works for all of our radio stations, comes by and offers Drew a sandwich and a cookie. Drew takes the sandwich. And now he's trying to eat the cookie that I took.
I haven't touched your cookie, for the record.
You're
eyeballing it.
I'm not eyeballing it.
You're definitely eyeballing it.
Nah, you can have the cookie. Don't worry about it. Anyways, we're thrilled that Tim Hortons is on board as a sponsor here of the 30th Annual Christmas Miracle. Big thank you to them for keeping us fed and fueled over the last 3 days. We've been here, of course, since early Thursday morning. So they've kept us well-fed and with some coffee behind us. So we're thrilled about that as well. Gentlemen, how many games need to be played for it to be a legitimate NHL season?
Go ahead, Richie.
48, I think. I think you're talking about nothing less than the 94-95 lockout season. And is that enough? I mean, does that make it a realistic... it's been done before, so you use past precedent, and it's been done again. Anything less than that's really a joke to me. 48's the cutoff point. Gary Bettman has said as much. I mean, quickly from a Jets perspective, and we have mentioned this on the show before, I mean, if you're looking for a kind of a miracle run, I mean, the Jets have a better chance, A, starting the season in the on the second half, with Bogosian hopefully coming back soon and making a run, because, you know, a 48-game season is less of a sample size and more of a chance to kind of make a run. So, I mean, from that sense, okay. And from on the other side, you say, I don't mind the Jets playing another year, kind of getting a good draft pick, but playing it out, maybe getting into the playoffs or sneaking in or getting another top 10, top 12 pick. So it goes both ways on that respect. Overall, though, you need to be able to play at a minimum 48 games. And you looked at 40. If you look at 41 and a half, you can't play a half season. It's to be a little bit more than that.
Yep.
And you also need to be able to schedule appropriately. So it's going to be unfortunate, but I think we're going to get a 48-game season minimum, if not a little earlier.
Let me ask you guys this.
Well, do I not get to answer here, Drew?
Sure. You can answer, then I'll ask.
What is this? Is this a...
Go.
Is this a cut-through Ezzy segment?
I wish it was a cut-through Ezzy show.
I'm not going to, you know, pick a different number. It's got to be 48 games, but... And the reality...
Glad we heard from you on that, then.
Exactly. But... You know, and we heard that if the season started December 20th, it could be 56 games. And Richie, you know, just to add to that too, they'll cram as many games as they can if they come to an agreement in mid-December, end of December, right? But that's what you're... I mean, 60 games is a stretch at this point. So you're looking at 48 to 56. That's the magic number. And the date where that has to happen is probably the first week of January. Not being when the season starts, but when they have to come to an agreement. So that means the season starts in mid-January.
The earliest they're going to come to an agreement at this point, I would say, is next Saturday, if everything goes well next week.
Yep.
So
they
come to an agreement next Saturday, that's the 50th.
Then you might get a 56-game season if that happens.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, let's say that they can start playing games New Year's Day. January 1st is when they can first start playing games.
Mm-hmm.
They were earlier talking about extending the regular season all the way through the end of April. That's what they were talking about when they were trying to salvage hope for an 82-game season.
Might be into May at that point.
So that's 4 months.
Hold on, Drew. But based on that schedule, then you're playing 15 games a month for 4 months, 60 games.
Yeah.
You can't play every other night for 4 months.
And those are all, even though if they're inter-conference games, that's still a lot of hockey.
Inter-conference, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can't, 56 even is like, what? A couple nights of the, a couple times we'll have a 2-day break between games. I mean, I guess they want to make money. That's the way to do it. But you're looking at more like a 50 or 48 game season already, I think.
So you don't think they can play 7 games in 14 days, let's say? You think that's too many? A game every 2 days?
It's a lot, Drew.
And the way the schedule comes out, each team has a stretch where they play a lot of games. If everybody remembers last year, the Jets had a lot of home games in December and a lot of games in general. I think they had 15. But to do that for 4 months, they're going to have to be smart about that. But they, I have to imagine they are going to cram in as many games as they can, because in 94, those 48 games, I think the season started January 20th.
January 20th,
So 48 games from January 20th to the end of April, that's a lot of hockey.
I don't remember when the regular season ended in 94.
End of April,
was it end of April?
Yeah.
Probably like the last day of April. So, but that's probably the least of their concerns at this point.
I think they'll do everything in their power to make it as long of a season as possible, simply for the money involved.
The question for the players is how much can we physically withstand to make get as much financially as we can out of this? That's the question.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the players should have, you know, when they come to a final decision, the players you would think should be involved in that. But, I mean, does the NHL have any obligation to consult with the players at that point?
Well, the owners don't want their assets, the players, I don't mean to speak of it in such business sense, but their assets to be, you know, burdened with playing so many games, especially for the playoff run after the fact.
Let me ask you guys this. Are we done with the concept that this is a partnership between both sides, like we heard after 2004-05? It's a partnership. We want to work together.
Well, it has to be in some senses because the revenues are tied to salaries.
But why isn't this then, aside from the tying of revenue to salaries, why isn't this just a employer-employee relationship?
Okay, hold on. But a second, in an ideal world, Drew, in a hockey utopia, if you will, you'd like for every time the CBA expires, you know, 6 months before it expires, mm-hmm. because when your lease expires, if you own a business and your lease expires, it's the 6 months leading up to the lease, you don't wait for the lease to expire that day. And then, I mean, in an ideal world, you'd like these guys to be negotiating the new CBA 6 months in advance, right? In an ideal world. And you'd like for the partnership to be hunky-dory. Mm-hmm. Well, that's obviously not the case, and there's a lack of trust on both sides. And I think you can look at what's going on right now, and you can see that the NHL and the NHLPA still have a lot of issues that are beyond negotiating the CBA. Now, I think that Donald Fehr, they hired him because they needed, let's be honest, they needed a guy to play hardball. They needed the top guy to negotiate with Gary Bettman. But, you know, Drew, I know where you're going with this, and maybe this whole partnership thing is a little bit too much because maybe the players have maybe thought that they have too much of a say in the business aspect of growing revenue and all that. And I think it might be a little bit troublesome. But like Richie said, they've tied revenues to the salary cap.
Think about it this way, okay? I mean, you want a guy to go do a charitable event. You want something like that. And that engages the audience. And that makes fans buy paraphernalia. And who gets a cut of the paraphernalia? Both of them.
That's a partnership.
Partnership.
It's a fair point. I just think that sometimes all this talk of it being a partnership in the last CBA, I think, came back to bite them a little bit in the butt.
Well, I mean, it also is a partnership in a sense without the ties, so I understand that, right? If no revenue to salary, well, in a free market system, if you make the team, if you, you know, you do some charitable deeds, not only does it make you more important, it makes a team look good, but it also makes you look good, and maybe, you know, Ty Domi was a classic case of that. His charitable work
probably kept him in the league for
not only that, but it made him a very wealthy man through Don Meehan's negotiating of how important he was to the community, and he was. So, I mean, that goes both ways as well. I don't think it's the most technical partnership you'll ever find, but I think there are some elements to it.
It's a partnership in the business sense. I mean, everybody knows, you know, you know, Legal Curve Hockey, for example, it's a partnership, even though we fight on a regular basis. Just kidding, but...
Well, you know,
it's not a partnership in the negotiating sense, Drew, yeah. because when you get to that negotiating table, Richie, all of a sudden, you've got guys, what they've been doing, you know, over the last 3 months is throwing mud back at each other. You know, oh, you guys took this, we took that, we're giving you this, we're taking this back. Is that a partnership? That sounds like a bunch of kids fighting on the playground.
It's a partnership when they have an agreement.
And before that, it's a vitriolic fight between two warring sides.
Yep. That's right.
And that's, I mean... That,
it's
and,
not a partnership.
Well, and I don't think that you can just snap your fingers at the end of the negotiations and everything's going to be hunky-dory.
I mean, you know, if you're looking at it from a... Say we had a tweet about, you know, somebody getting separated and divorced and, you know, think about it in that sense is you're looking at an agreement and if you want to take a more negotiation-based approach, you can get out of it and move forward together or you can go to battle and go to war and look what happens, you lose... Go to battle to go to war, and then what happens after if you have kids?
So is this you're caught in the middle?
No. Okay. But you eventually have to work together again, regardless.
Usually you do.
So you got to work together regardless under both situations. So how do you want to approach it? They've approached it this way.
Irreconcilable differences.
And ultimately, you know who wins? The lawyers. The lawyers always win, like you there, Richie. Yeah. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive at St. Patel Center Food Hall in support of the Christmas Cheer Board. When we come back, Ray Ratto from CSNBayArea.com is going to join us live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the St. Patel Center Food Hall in support of the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website for the latest NHL and CBA news is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He is Ray Ratto from CSNBayArea.com. Ray, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
How are you boys doing?
We're doing well. How about yourself, Ray? A little bit warmer there in San Francisco, I would think, than it is here in Winnipeg.
I don't know. It's kind of cranky here, too. So.
Fair enough. Ray, you know, you wrote a great column, and we'll send it out on our Twitter page at Illegal Curve, talking about how it's really just become about a personality clash, largely between Donald Fehr on the player side and Jeremy Jacobs on the ownership side. Before we get to that column specifically, what were your thoughts on the performances that we saw Thursday night with the dueling press conferences?
Well, you know, once everything collapsed. You know, they fell into their familiar mode. I thought Don Fehr, you know, given that he's, you know, more on the side of the Angels than the owners are, he handled it okay. He might have jumped the gun a bit, but the fact that they started putting in some moderates in the room must have given him some hope. But the fact that Jeremy Jacobs and Murray Edwards still in there, too, should have tempered that hope. And then, well, Bettman is, you know, he's basically carrying the owner's water, so he was going to, you know, he was going to be cranky, and, you know, it was mostly for show. I mean, the real stuff, you know, frankly, never happens where you can see it. And, you know, except for when Jacobs and Bill Daly were all upset out in the open, most of this stuff has been kabuki theater for all of us and then guesswork and reporting inside.
Ray, you talk about the battle of personalities, specifically Jeremy Jacobs and Donald Fehr. Now, what do you think? What steps could have been done in the preliminary stages for the parties to have avoided this personality clash?
Well, the most important thing was for the owners to go in, as baseball owners have done now for the last decade and a half, and basically say, it doesn't matter who's on the other side, let's get a deal. The hockey owners, on the other hand, and they've done this now 3 times in a row, which is to open by demonizing the head of the players' union, whoever that happens to be at any point. And it was a strategy that worked last time because of the owners largely got what they wanted, you know, and then they later circumvented it and turned it into a bad deal again. But they go in thinking this is blood sport rather than a negotiation. And the negotiations are designed to get a deal. here was a guy who ran the baseball union, and from 1995 on, they haven't had a spot of trouble. And in fact, the game has grown about like eightfold in terms of revenue, largely because the two sides don't want to pick any more fights. They're punched out. And so that would have been the first thing. So the owners just say, the deal is more important than the pissing match. The second thing that could have happened, that the two sides had not waited until September 15th to start talking, because that was the first indication that the owners really wanted to show them the shutdown card right away. I mean, they wasted an entire summer, and a lot of this stuff could have been avoided if the two sides wanted to avoid it by getting the process started earlier. They waited to the last possible moment to get this done, to get started, and they haven't really made a whole lot of progress in the 3 months since.
Ray, you know, a lot has been made about the hardline owners, whether it's Jeremy Jacobs or Ed Snyder, who apparently isn't a hardline owner anymore. But, you know, talking about the moderate owners, and you could put maybe some of the guys that were in the room on Wednesday in there, whether it's a Mark Chipman or maybe a Ron Burkle, if you want to break it up into moderate and hardline owners. But why do you think those moderate owners have it appears, and the perception has been, that they've taken a bit of a backseat in this current negotiating process?
Well, it's not a perception, it's a fact, because Burkle is a consummate deal maker. And when they brought in the moderates, you know, you would think, oh, here's the breakthrough. But as long as Jacobs and Edwards were in there, and Jacobs still has a lot of throw weight in this league, it was not going to be a moderate show. The moderates have to be the ones doing the talking, you know, rather than just sort of, here, come see how we're making this off. Because frankly, when Fear left the room, the battle here is not Fear and Bettman. Bettman is the league's office boy on this. Mm-hmm. He's following his marching orders. If Bettman had to be out of the room, then Jacobs had to be out of the room. That's the more equal fight here. And so as long as Jacobs and Murray Edwards, you know, or Craig Leopold are in the room, you are not going to get an even representation. The moderates will not be in charge. The moderates can't just be present. They have to be running this. Otherwise, you don't get a deal.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Ray Ratto. He is a columnist with CSNBayArea.com here on TSN 1290. Ray, you know, largely the CBA negotiation is about, you know, benefiting the small market franchises, making sure that they're, you know, that they have survivability in the next collective bargaining and for the next decade or so to come. Yet there are no small market owners heavily involved in the process to negotiate the CBA. Why is that?
Largely, I think it's because, and it's not just small market guys, but it's guys in the middle, too.
Sure.
You know, San Jose being a classic example of that. You know, they sell out their building all the time, and they're competitive, and yet they claim to be losing $15 million a year, which, frankly, I find a little high, but, you know, I don't know what their bookkeeping procedures are. But the fact that they've always thought, well, the owners will take care of us, and we don't care where the money comes from, as long as we get it. Well, the hardliners are the ones who say, okay, if we're going to redistribute this, it's going to come out of the players' end, not our end. And that's really what the essential philosophical fight here is. Who covers the teams with shortfall? And I think the league's position was, well, we'll just whack the players' salaries by 20%, and that'll keep the small market guys quiet. It doesn't work that way, because that was going to be what the last CBA was supposed to do. And all that did was allow owners and agents who deal with the high-revenue guys to figure out loopholes that made the margins wider. So really, the fact is they want someone else to do their work for them, and they're the ones who have to be in the room. Now, maybe the powerful owners don't want them in the room because they think they're just profit takers. But if they're not going to be heavily involved in this, and that means being present and making arguments in the room, then they're just letting the hardliners dictate the talking points and dictate the terms. And they end up getting screwed every time. I don't know why they keep tolerating.
Now, Ray, you talked before about Major League Baseball and the partnerships that they've formed and the health of the game, really. There, everybody seems to be making money in the free market system. On the television aspect of that, you know, you have this $200 million deal coming in with NBC. The Canadian deal is supposed to be renegotiated in about 2 years' time. But is it made more difficult for the NHL in terms of revenue sharing, in terms of coming to an agreement? Because, you know, in baseball, you have ESPN paying $700 million a year, and Fox paying $500 million, and TBS paying $300 million, and MLB Network paying themselves a bit. So you're at least $1.5 billion a year, never mind the local deals, whereas in the NHL, you might be lucky to get to $500 million, and their local deals are all smaller. How much of an effect does that have on this whole negotiation?
I don't think it had much effect on it, except that the proportions are smaller for everybody, but if you look at the last Forbes evaluations of the team, you know, the league as a whole, if you amass all their revenues and all their losses, is making money. So first of all, the question is about distribution. Secondly, the fact that you're shutting down the league again doesn't bode well for your American networks.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the Canadian market is going to be fine forever. I mean, it's the national game. So CBC and TSN will fight about that in perpetuity. But the last time they shut this down, ESPN walked away, replaced hockey with poker, and made more money with poker than they ever did with hockey. Well, now you've got NBC, which is owned by Comcast, which used to be owned by Ed Snyder, of all people, and they're being told, well, we're not giving you any product, even though you've got a guy who could be in the room. So, you know, if you're an American broadcast company, and even one that needs programming, you're not going to invest a lot as long as these guys don't feel like playing every 5 or 6 years. So I don't think it was the size of the shares that mattered as much as the fact that they basically said, we would rather not put out product than let the union feel like it won. I mean, that's the kind of short-sighted stuff that baseball used to do to its great detriment.
Right.
And as a result of them no longer doing these idiotic lockouts, they have grown the game, and they've made tons of money. They've gone from about $1.5 billion to $8 billion a year. And a lot of that is not TV money, it's internet money. So, frankly, it's one more case of shooting off your foot because you'd rather not trim your toenails.
Ray, for the listeners that are just tuning in, you're in the Bay Area, and obviously the San Jose Sharks are in the Bay Area. Are people in San Jose even talking about this lockout, or are people just completely almost apathetic to this whole thing that's going on?
Well, hockey fans are talking about it, but people who are not big hockey fans, I mean, they're paying attention to it in that, oh, look at that guy walking down the street with no pants on, kind of way. You know, if you're just, you know, a lot of these guys own or operate their own arenas. And to basically turn down 50 dates a year, you know, even you know, casual fans or not even non-fans will go, well, that seems stupid. Mm-hmm. And then they're at least aware enough of the sport. They go, well, wait a minute, they just did this 7 years ago. Well, that's stupid, too. So, really, it's not as apathetic as it is bemused by the monumental ignorance of it. And, you know, let's face it, it's a snarkier world out there. And when rich people do stupid stuff, I think we all enjoy it a little more. But this is pretty stupid, even by their standards.
Stupid would be a nice word for it. Ray, we'll let you go on this last question. It's the million-dollar question. How do you see this resolving, and do you think there's an NHL season this year?
I have always thought that there wouldn't be because of the late start in negotiations and the fact that the league is still driven at times like this by the six or seven hardliners who use Gary Bettman as their human shield. It's going to take a full-on, basically, overthrow of the government by the moderates. I mean, the San Jose guy, the Pittsburgh guy, Jim Dolan, you know, in New York, Rocky Wirtz, you know, Larry Tannenbaum, your guy. You know, it's, you know, I mean, frankly, I mean, David Thompson you know, has most of the money in your operation. If he walks into the room, people are going to sit up and take notice, even Jacobs. You know, you just have to bring throw weight. And so far they haven't brought that throw weight. And even the gesture the other day, you know, what was sort of, you know, sort of a half-assed, you know, gesture. So I think this is not going to happen. I think they're going to run out of time before they realize what they're about to lose.
Ray Ratto from CSNBayArea.com. He's a columnist in the San Francisco region. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, guys, stay warm.
Thanks a lot, Ray.
Take care.
Let's go to break. We're live at the 30th Annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive at the St. Vitale Center Food Hall. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the St. Vitale Center Food Hall, the 30th Annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. Come on down, bring a new unwrapped toy or a cash donation. You'll get entered, you get a ballot to enter a number of our great raffle draws. If you don't have a toy handy, I'm looking over to my right. There's a Toys R Us Express right over there. Head in there, buy a nice little gift, give it to the Christmas cheer board. You get entered into win some great draws. Trip for two, courtesy of Transat Holidays. Perhaps you would want this lovely Kernhill recliner. It's got the Jets logo. That's next to me. Living room sets from Kernhill Furniture. Another living room set, a Winnipeg Jets autographed jersey, autographed by Zach Bogosian. Whatever you want, come on down. Cash donation or an unwrapped toy, and you get entered. You get a ballot to be entered into any of those draws. Richie, our Christmas miracle happened a little bit earlier this week, you know.
Well, you're here, so what was it?
Well, it's when Ezzy gave up his BlackBerry and went to iPhone. He's no longer on BBM.
Oh,
so that's
God.
Our Christmas miracle. You know, we couldn't be happier about that.
I'm still texting you, though.
No, I just ignore your texts altogether. You're far less annoying on text than you were on BBM. But that, as far as I'm concerned, that was really my Christmas gift from the society.
Yeah, it's a tough transition. I kind of miss the BlackBerry, to be honest with you. Everyone says the iPhone is better. I guess it is in a way, but texting and BBMing is... I'm having difficulty giving it up, but...
I got to say, your fingers are sort of on the big side, so how are you handling the...
Oh, yeah, I definitely have meat hooks.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it just it takes me, like, 15 minutes to, like, text Richie hi, because I say, like, hit, hip, like, I, you know, the autocorrect. But, whatever. I mean, a phone is a phone. I mean, I think people put a little bit too much into it. But, hey, Drew, you're happy that I'm BBMing you less, so I guess that's a good thing, right?
I absolutely am. I'm ecstatic about that.
Yep.
Well, it doesn't look like there's going to be any NHL hockey up until at least Boxing Day. And you know what Boxing Day always represents. That's the start of the World Junior Hockey Championships. Mm-hmm. I believe this would be time for Richie and I for our annual disclaimer that we're not huge fans of this tournament.
Ezzy,
this is your disclaimer where you say you're a huge fan of this
tournament? Although, I will say that my biggest issue with the tournament is that you don't actually get best on best because a lot of the players are at the NHL. That's always been my disclaimer.
Right.
You know, that's a little subheading of the disclaimer, is that I don't love the tournament because half the time the best players on, you know, Canada are in the NHL, and that's not a fair representation of the best players under that age. If they don't play this year, then this will be a tournament far more worth watching, in my opinion.
Well, we remember the 04-05 tournament that happened in Grand Forks, and...
Yeah. We were down there.
Yeah, we were down there. Yeah. And it wasn't even a tournament. They didn't even have to bother to play that tournament. Canada dominated in such... Really, it was epic fashion. Because you look at that team. The team that Canada brought out there to that tournament.
Almost every single player is in the NHL now. And it's not only in the NHL, it's
superstars in the NHL. I mean, that tournament...
Crosby being obviously the obvious one, but there was Mike Richards, Jeff Carter.
Wasn't Dion Phaneuf on the back end there?
Dion Phaneuf.
Weber.
Yeah, Shea Weber. That was just a loaded tournament.
Yep.
So, if there is no NHL hockey, as you know, we suspect there won't be by the start of that tournament, give or take a couple days, do you expect to see the sort of the similar dominating performance from Team Canada as we saw in 04-05, or was that just sort of a rare generational sort of thing that it all came together like that?
I think the team will be very good. I don't think the team will be at the level of that team. I think that team was kind of a once in a... I don't know what's a lifetime, but...
It almost was.
The draft was just so strong.
It was once in a lifetime.
It's so strong that I don't think you're going to see guys of that quality. I mean, Dougie Hamilton's supposed to be a real good player, and Ryan Murphy's a really good offensive player, and they have Dumba. They have a lot of good, talented players up there. Having said that, you know, Nugent Hopkins, if he plays, you're going to look at a pretty good team. On the back end, you might be able to argue. I think at forward, you won't be as strong.
Yeah.
And then in goal, you'll probably be stronger because that team, I think, was led by Rajon Beauchemin, Winnipegger, but he didn't end up turning into
a Calgary Flame draft pick?
Philly, I think it was.
Big class as well.
you know, let's talk about Mark Scheifele, because he's the Winnipeg Jet prospect, and he's...
It's his second tournament.
Yeah, it's his second tournament. He's the guy, he's at the age now where you expect to see him dominating that kind of tournament. You know, how important is this tournament for Mark Scheifele?
I think this is what we always talk about, and you know, whether or not how big of a deal you put into this tournament, it's an opportunity for them to play an international tournament with international competition and international stakes. And again, I think when a guy has a good tournament, you know, when the guy's coming up, you say, oh, he had a good tournament. And sure, it can help a guy's development in the sense that, let's say he was struggling, Richie, and, you know, he has a good performance in the World Juniors. It's quite possible that he'll go back to his junior team and, you know, he'll carry that over. But it doesn't necessarily mean that because the guy has a good World Junior tournament, he's going to develop into a great prospect. So this isn't make or break for Mark Scheifele. I mean, Mark Scheifele right now is top 10 in the OHL in scoring. He's dominating, by the way, the Jets wanted him to do. That's why they sent him back to the OHL. Well, there was only that or go to the Jets. He couldn't go to the AHL. But he's playing very well.
An exemption was made. They could have sent him to the AHL.
But it was
if they
only because of the lockout.
Right, only because of the lockout.
If there wasn't a lockout, he couldn't have played in the AHL.
Correct.
But it's important in the sense that he didn't play as well as he wanted to last year. And this year he's going to be expected to, along with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and a lot of the 19-year-olds, the guys that are returning, like Dougie Hamilton, like Scott Harrington, like Jonathan Huberdeau, there's going to be a lot of good players playing for Canada. But it's important in the sense that, he wants to have a good tournament. And you got to keep in mind, too, Canada hasn't won the tournament in 3 years now. So, you know, everybody remembers Canada winning five in a row in the mid-90s and five in a row in the early 2000s, mid-2000s. But, you know, this is important because, you know, Canada doesn't win this tournament every year. And last year they had to, you know, scrape out a bronze medal in Alberta and Saskatchewan.
I think the tournament for Scheifele is pretty important, actually. I think on the international stage he's played below expectations, I think, for sure. I don't think he's been... Last year he started off as the de facto number one center, and by the end of the tournament, he was in number four center, hardly playing at all. So, I mean, I think it's an important series for him. He played a little bit better in the, I think it was it the Russian Super Series earlier on in the
OHL.
But that was his first real, you know, the turn that that's
oh, sorry.
Best of three, whatever they have. They have different names for all that stuff. But he played better in that
Super Series or something.
Well, better than that than he had before. But in other international competition or games against best on best, I've always found Mark Scheifele to be lacking. So his performance in the OHL has been great, but he's as old as you can get in the league. 2 years, you know, he's drafted not this past one, the year before.
Right.
So it's his second year now playing in the league after being drafted. He's been dominating, but so is Ryan Strome, a guy drafted right before him. That age and a top 10 draft pick that age should be dominating in the OHL. That doesn't take away from his performance, but it doesn't mean that it's a shoo-in to be successful. Right. You know, for a guy that he's been compared to, like a Sean Couturier, he's playing almost a point-a-game level in the AHL, performed really well against Malkin last year in the NHL. Dougie Hamilton's supposed to be a great player. So I think Scheifele's got to prove himself that he can be on the number one line, whether they move him to right wing or whether they put him at center, whatever it may be, or the second line. He has to... Will his career fall by the wayside if he doesn't? Not necessarily. But at some point, you got to prove yourself against best on best, and this is his opportunity.
And I think that, by the way, I think he's going to prove it. And I think this year, playing with other 19-year-olds, he's got Ryan Strome right now, who's leading the OHL in scoring.
Mm-hmm.
New York Islanders draft pick. You've got Florida Panthers draft pick, Jonathan Huberdeau, who would easily be in the NHL this year, playing for the Florida Panthers. And other 19-year-olds, like we've mentioned, Dougie Hamilton and other guys that were drafted in 2011, but I think there's going to be a little bit more pressure off of him, because remember, also Nathan MacKinnon is expected to make the team. Again, not a shoo-in, because Ryan Nugent-Hopkins didn't make the team 2 years
ago. Well, let me ask you this. Would you be surprised if Nathan MacKinnon didn't make this team?
No, because they always
there's
leave
a lot
off
of 19-year-olds. It's tough.
They always leave off the best young draft-eligible player for some third-line checker every year.
But then again, in 2005, Crosby was a 16-year-old and made a team when Getzlaff and Perry were older.
Him and Tavares are different in that sense. But, I mean,
Crosby.
And MacKinnon,
Crosby and Tavares.
But MacKinnon's, hopefully you see him make the team. But how many times have we seen that the top entry-level player eligible for the Canadian juniors, and they cut him and they put some third-line checker, and then they lose games 3-2 because they can't score?
Sorry, we should mention, Richie, that
which is sort
McKinnon's
of
a 17-year-old, Crosby was a 16-year-old.
Yeah. Which I should mention, you know, I should point out, that's a sort of a theory that they've done away with in terms of picking an Olympic team.
Yeah.
They've taken the best players and sort of stuck them into different roles,
right,
as opposed to guys they think should only be checkers and taking those guys, as opposed to taking the best talent.
On the days of Rob Zamner.
Well, the days of Rob Zamner being on your Olympic team, which, you know, thankfully are long past us.
And Drew, what Craig Button said last week when we had him on the show,
yeah,
is that he said, you know, especially in a lockout year, everybody knows that, you know, Hockey Canada develops players and we're always considered a contender. But in a year like this, when you've got, you know, Ryan Strome and Mark Scheifele and all these guys, if Nathan McKinnon can't make the team, again, that shows you that they just thought that he wouldn't be served to play a fourth line role or whatever.
Well, if Nathan McKinnon doesn't make the team, but Seth Jones makes the team for Team USA, do you think,
right,
that has any impact on the first overall, second overall, in the whenever there's another NHL entry draft?
Not really. I just have a hard time believing there's going to be 13 better forwards than Nathan McKinnon.
Right.
I agree with you, because especially everything, you know, if the guy's going to be the first overall pick in this coming draft, you know, are you drafting the most talented guys? Or are you drafting guys who you think best will fit your system, whatever your system is?
Like Nugent Hopkins, everybody knew he was going to be the best player. He doesn't make it. I mean, it's happened many times before, and I'm sick of it. I've been ranting about this since the back on
Kick. I think a lot of people, Richie, will talk about it. It'll be big news that McKinnon doesn't make Team Canada, but then when it comes down to the 2013 NHL entry draft, it won't matter at all.
I think he makes the team, but yeah, I agree, it won't matter at all.
People will talk about it for leading up to it.
Yep.
And then it won't matter at all. But the reality here is it's going to be a good tournament. You've got Jacob Trouba, who's probably going to make the U.S. team, playing for University of Michigan.
Right.
Like you mentioned, Seth Jones. And, you know, it's in Russia this year, so, I mean, it's always a little, there's always a little bit of an unknown. I always kind of like it when the tournament isn't in Canada. It seems like it's in Canada every 2 years or...
Well, it's in Canada every 2 years because that's where they make most of their revenue.
Absolutely.
That's why when it's in the U.S., it's always in these border towns.
Yep.
So Canadians will drive down to Grand Forks or to Buffalo or wherever else it is. That's largely why they put them in the places they
do. I think when you're talking about this lockout year, you know, the World Junior Tournament is going to be, you know, pretty much the first real good hockey we've seen in a long time. Not to take anything away from the Continental League or the AHL, but, I mean, these are guys that... a lot of them, in Canada's case, should be in the NHL right now.
Agreed. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the Food Hall at St. Vitale Centre for the 30th Annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the Food Hall at St. Vitale Centre, the 30th Annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. Still some time until about 6 o'clock tonight. Bring down a new unwrapped toy, or you can always make a cash, debit, credit card, check, donation, and you get entered in a ballot. You get to enter into one of our great raffle prizes, courtesy of Kern Hill Furniture. There's one courtesy of Transat Holidays. There's a Winnipeg Jets autographed jersey. Some great prizes down here. And, of course, if you do make a donation, come over, see us over at the Illegal Curve, the TSN 1290 booth, and we're going to give you an Illegal Curve hat, just our way of saying thank you for being a part of the 30th Annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with your latest NHL and CBA news is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Rapid fire.
Going to do rapid fire a little bit earlier than we normally do. We'll have some exciting stuff at 2:45 instead. Detroit Red Wings owner and pizza connoisseur Mike Ilitch has announced plans for a proposed $650 million development in downtown Detroit, the anchor of which would be a new arena for the Detroit Red Wings. The Red Wings' current arena, the Joe Louis Arena, is the fourth oldest in the NHL, having opened in 1979. Who is the best Red Wings player to have played in Joe Louis Arena?
Wow. That's a tough question. I mean... Do you go modern player, or do you go...
Well, since 79, is he?
79.
Well, I mean, that's a long time ago. But do you go modern player, or do you go back to, I don't know, the Stevie Y days?
Well, you know what? The question,
I would
the question
say Stevie
to me,
Y, probably.
The question to me, I mean, you're looking at four players, really, to me. Five, maybe. You're looking at...
The Russian five?
No, you're looking... No, but they were great, but that wasn't their prime. You're looking at Stevie Yzerman, Nicholas Lidstrom, Sergei Fedorov, Pavel Datsyuk, and Brendan Shanahan. Those are the five. I think
it's Stevie Y, Richie.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't think... I mean, he came into the league in, what, 83?
Yeah, around there.
Over
when Drew was 30.
Over Lidstrom?
Yeah.
When I was 30 in 1983, yeah. Stevie Yzerman over.
I mean,
Nicholas
I guess
Lidstrom?
You got to take Lidstrom because he's arguably the best defenseman of all time. You take Lidstrom for your team. But
yeah,
Stevie Y is a close second.
Yeah, but see, Richie, I think if you're going modern, you have to separate into the Yzerman years, the early 80s.
You're not going modern. You're just going since 1979.
Lidstrom gives you the
32 years.
Gives you the best defenseman in the league for 20 years. One thing I want to say about that, Drew, is I've been to Joe Louis Arena, great arena. I don't think this is as much to do with the arena, even making money for Mike Ilitch, as much as it has to do with the downtown of Detroit. If you've been there recently, I've been there a few years ago, they need to be revitalized more than anything. So I think Mike Ilitch is doing this as much for the city as anything else.
Even though history has shown us that arenas don't necessarily revitalize areas.
But this is not just an arena. There's other parts to this as well. And I don't know if you've been to downtown Detroit.
I have not had the pleasure.
They could use a few new buildings and something to bring people around a common area, and I think this is a good idea.
Richie, okay. I haven't been to downtown Detroit, but I've seen the movie 8 Mile, and that's all you need to know right there.
Former NHL tough guy Ty Domi is buddies with actor Mark Wahlberg. While promoting his new movie, Mark Wahlberg challenged Ty Domi to a fight, with all proceeds going to charity. Fortunately for Wahlberg, Ty Domi turned down the offer, quote-unquote, out of respect for Wahlberg's pretty face. If given the opportunity to promote a boxing match between a former NHL enforcer and an actor, who would you choose as the enforcer and who would you choose as the actor?
Great question, as Matty Leibel has just made his way along with Rick Ralph to the station here, to the table.
Oh, yeah. Do you have an answer?
Great answer. Great question. Wow. If I'm going to go old enforcers, maybe I want to see Sean Cronin.
Oh, man, I was going to say Sean Cronin.
Really? Okay, I'll let you have Sean Cronin then.
Okay, now you got to use
him.
Now you got to use him.
Let's pick two new guys. Okay, I want to see Cam Jansen in a fight versus Brad Pitt. One-on-one. Hey, he was in Fight Club.
Yeah.
Snatch.
Yeah.
He's a little scrappy.
Sure.
Cam Jansen versus Brad Pitt.
Okay.
I mean, you asked the question.
I asked the question.
I'm not saying my answer is good.
There's no right or wrong answers when you're talking about something like this. Richie?
It's a really good question, Drew. You know, once in a while, broken clocks right twice a day, right?
Yeah. So you're saying that only twice a day do I ever have a good question.
I'm not saying that. You said that. But.
Right.
By the way, we're
Sergio Mimesso against James Gandolfini.
Really?
What?
Sort of a battle of the Italians.
Yeah.
That was the most obscure combination
you could possibly
come up with.
Soprano, and then you got Sergio Mimesso. Remember Sergio Mimesso? I think he was number 27.
I'm surprised you're not going with Tony Tanti in that case.
Tony Tanti versus that villain character? Or no, that was Tony Twist.
Yeah,
that whole thing?
Yeah,
with the,
yeah, yeah.
I hated Mimesso when he played on the Canucks against the Jets. He was dirty. He was annoying. He was unapologetic. You think Gandolfini would clean his clock? What about you, Drew?
I don't know. I didn't know. I just write the questions. I leave the answers to you guys. Teemu Selänne, Ducks forward and would-be shoo-in for Winnipeg mayor, if he ever decided to run for mayor here, has decided to get into the restaurant business. Teemu Tavern and Grill, an upscale steakhouse, will soon open in Laguna Beach, California. Given Timu's hockey career, what should be the marquee item on the menu?
Wow. Again, great innovative question there. Well, he's the Finnish Flash, so it's got to be something quick, right?
Quick would be good.
Quick serve. I'm going to say that it should be... You know what? That's a tough question. What's quick? I mean, maybe... It's got to be maybe a sandwich, maybe a light Finnish. What do they eat in Finland? What kind of meat do they?
Well, that's leading into the next question, so I'm not going to answer that one yet.
There's a question about Finnish meat.
Yes, there is.
Okay, what should they serve? What should be the
could say a 76 ounce steak.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, you know, something
but
like that.
It's got to be something that you got to eat quick.
A flash fried buffalo, that would also work.
Yeah, flash fried. Okay, something fried. Yeah, flash fried. Flash fried. But what's good? And it's in California though.
Yeah.
Flash fried chicken or something like that, because chicken is big. Flash fried chicken and waffles. How about that?
Okay, that's fine.
I don't know.
Terrible
I'm
answer.
Reading on Wikipedia now, the popular Finnish foods are meats, berries, mushrooms, bread, or as Drew calls, breakfast. I'm not really sure, but maybe porridge. They're really into porridge, so maybe a lot of porridge.
You do like you had oatmeal for breakfast today.
I did. Have
well,
oatmeal.
Richie, your problem is that you're looking up Finnish food on Wikipedia.
Halakialit. Heron and Akato. I think that kind of stuff would be great there.
You don't know what either of those things
no,
are.
No, I don't have a clue.
Okay, anyways. Tampa Bay Lightning defenseman Victor Hedman recently gave an interview where he spoke positively about his experience playing for Barry Sastana of the KHL. Hedman said his time has been, and I quote, a great experience. I've been playing a lot and developing my game. I'm very happy I chose to come here, and I'm very eager to get back to Tampa and prove I've gotten better as a player. His only complaint has been the menu options, as he had to eat horse a number of times, given that it's considered a delicacy in Kazakhstan, where the Baris Astana team is located.
Drew, do you sell horse meat in your spare time?
I don't.
Where do you get this stuff?
If you were playing hockey overseas, would you prefer to dine on horse meat in the KHL or reindeer in the Finnish Elite League?
You know, funny thing, Richie. I actually had horse for lunch yesterday and then reindeer for dinner. And I can tell you, that reindeer, that's some
Drew,
tough...
Drew, any of these questions have anything to do with hockey?
Way, I don't know if we should be talking about eating reindeer
you know
when we're celebrating the Christmas you know, toy drive, eating reindeer.
You know, actually,
so I'm going to go with horse.
My friend Jay Riemenschneider eats horse all the time.
Ah, interesting.
Good Seinfeld reference
yes,
there, Richie.
Exactly.
You know what? I'm going to... You know what? I don't want... Yeah, by the way, I think Remus, you can hear he's doing horse sound effects. I don't know if you can hear it very well
yeah,
in your
you
headphones.
Can,
there
yeah.
you go. I'd like to... You know what? I'm going to pass on this question, Drew.
Okay.
Because I don't want to eat horse because they're a beautiful animal. And I'm going to stick to eating, you know, chicken and beef. So...
be more of a secretariat, probably.
I guess if I had the choice, I'll go reindeer.
Okay.
Even though we're celebrating the Christmas... season here.
There you go. That's it for Rapid Fire on this Saturday afternoon. Let's go to break. When we come in, we're going to bring in our good friend Matty Leibel. You know, the first night of Hanukkah is tonight.
And
so we have to give a little bit of a shout out to that. Matty Leibel is going to join us. Constantine is supposed to call
that's
us
right.
from New York City.
The so man, the myth, the legend.
That's
Don't
right.
forget about Constantine.
So we
He's
can,
waiting on the line here.
We can hear about how he had his fun there in New York.
How did he get into the meetings?
It is a little bizarre, and it tells you all you need to know about
it. How did I get onto the show?
Both good questions. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the Food Hall at St. Patel Center for the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the Food Hall at St. Patel Center, the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. Matty Leibel is going to join us for the next 10 or so minutes, and then you're doing a show afterwards, right? A special edition with Rick and Joel's coming on as well, isn't that right?
I don't know exactly who they invited. I figure if they invited me,
yeah,
you have to
imagine.
They went through the list,
yeah.
right? Like they crossed
yeah.
up four or yeah. five names, and they got to me. Yeah. But that's, you know, the real thrill for me is I'm with you guys right here. This is exciting, but we'll get to me after. You know,
yeah.
I think you've got more actual and pressing issues to deal with first.
We do. We do have more pressing issues. If you've been following Twitter at all for the course of these last few days, probably since about Wednesday or so,
yep.
you've seen some live on location reports
yep.
from @JetsXOXO. His name is Constantine.
Yep.
You've heard him. He was on, I believe, with Hustler and Lawless earlier this week. He's our good friend, Constantine. Dean, how are you, buddy? Are you there? Looks like we've...
Happy Hanukkah.
There
Merry
you go,
Christmas.
Dean. Dean, you know, for the, you know, sort of a, I mean, this is a story you can tell people for the rest of your life. Why don't you sort of start with, how did you get into the room where the media was being held? How did you get into the meetings to begin with?
Like I do with everything in life, I walk in like I own the place and I have every right to be there. So.
And the only accreditation you have is
yes.
you have a, I mean, you work at the United Nations, so you have a UN pass of some sort. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. There's nobody in, that kind of gets you into everything you need to do in this city. For instance, last night I attended the Cosmopolitan magazine Christmas party just because I was in a good suit and I had my pass. People don't even want to know. They're just like, okay, stay out of his way.
So you walk into the Westin Hotel where they're holding the meetings,
yeah.
and is there anybody from, say, NHL security involved or you know, asking you who you are, aside from the
yeah.
fact you're a guy wearing a suit and who works for the UN?
Yeah, more or less. Like, after I began live tweeting that I got in there and posting some pictures, immediately a representative from the NHL came over and gave me the stink eye and grilled me a bit, saying, who are you? What are you doing here? So I pulled out my badge from that, and because I've worked previously with the Winnipeg Jets, and I pulled out my Jets ID, and I said, I didn't even say anything, I just said, can you go get me a coffee to the guy? He was like, listen, we don't need any stunts here, so just don't make a scene.
So you were carrying a Jets jersey with you, is that right?
Yes, I had a Jets jersey in my bag because I went to work that day, and then I was going to go stand outside, with put on my Jets jersey, hold up a sign, pleading on behalf of the fans. But instead, there was some fans there, and they were like, well, I asked the guys who were already on the street, what's going on, how's the day been? And they said, well, if you work with the, if you've got some credentials you think might work, you might as well give it a shot. Go up there and see if you can get in. So I had the jersey tucked in my briefcase, waiting to pull it out, assuming we were going to get a breakthrough on Wednesday night. But and once the NHL representative came and spoke with me, I decided my best angle to keep this joke going was to just keep that in my briefcase and act like I had any business in the world to be there.
So the NHL security, you know, interrogates you, for lack of a better word, yet they let you stay even though you really have no business being there, you know. No offense, but you have no business being there. And you spend the next day and a half live tweeting from the media room. Like, you were given pretty much the same access as all the, you know, credentialed media. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And, in fact, I was maneuvering my way through the floors of the hotel, helping myself to different buffets, bars, and food that other conferences were having at that time. That's correct.
And so who are the nicest media guys to you? I mean, you did an interview with Elliot Friedman of CBC, so, I mean, obviously Elliot had enough time to, you know, sit around and chat with you.
Yeah, I can't even say enough how amazing Elliot Friedman was to me over the course of that time period, and even all of the CBC staff, because there were several members from different sectors of the CBC, and they were just so kind, generous, and hospitable to me. Elliot took all the time in the world for me. I offered to buy him lunch, and he offered to buy me lunch. We were buying each other coffee. He took all the time in the world for me, and I just can't say enough good about Elliot Friedman. He's a true, classy, knowledgeable Canadian hockey celebrity.
Dean, you had it's Rich, by the way. You had a great tweet. The tweet, I believe, said something about Jeremy Jacobs and Bill Daly speaking in the hallway, and Jeremy Jacobs, you know, throwing his hands up in the air, very animated. Then you had a period, and then the next comment was, Elliot Friedman is eating fruit.
Yeah, it was a banana, in fact, Richard. It was a banana, in fact.
So, I mean, it's pretty obvious, based on the tweeting that you were doing and the interactions with the media guys, there was a lot of sort of hurry up and wait. Is that a fair description of the, you know, as to the events?
It was such, you know, and I can't convey how embarrassed I personally felt after the way it unfolded, because there was all this anticipation, hope, and just there was so much hope and optimism in the air for it to end in the hissy fits that the NHL and the NHLPA went down like it was a high school dance, throwing up their arms in the air, and it was just so uncoordinated and embarrassing to the sport. I seriously was tearing up. I was so upset. Thank God the Madison Square Garden had a Christmas party with an open bar and buffet to help me heal my wounds, because it was so embarrassing.
So, Constantine, now that you, even though we must say that, again, for those who are just tuning in, you're working for the UN in New York, you're from Winnipeg, we've known you, got to know you, you're a Jet season ticket holder.
That's correct.
But now that you've developed this cult following, you've been on the Hustler and Lawless show, I believe you've been on CBC Radio.
Yes,
now that
correct.
Now that you've attended 3 days of NHL-NHLPA meetings, everybody obviously wants to know, are you going to make a career out of this, possibly become the New York correspondent of a legal curve, possibly?
Yes, I accept that position. I'd be happy to help you guys. You guys, I listen to your show all the time. You know how, whenever I've seen you at where I first met you at the restaurant, I've always tried to go out of my way to get you guys an extra piece of cake or dessert. I love you guys and respect what you've done for so long. And I can say the only reason why I'm even on Twitter is to follow the Illegal Curve program. You guys do such a fantastic job for the Winnipeg Jets, such a fantastic job for the sports community. It's been a blessing in my life to have any interaction with you and to just follow you guys, because you do such a good job.
Dean, it's an absolutely amazing story. You'll be telling it for the rest of your life. Glad that you were able to share it with our audience and with ourselves today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm sure you're off to crash another Christmas party, so we'll let you get to that. And, you know, keep doing it for as long as you can. I mean, you know, until they say no, you might as well keep at it.
Yeah, you know what? And to everybody, just always put yourself forward, put your best foot ahead, and, you know, never take life for granted. Do your best every day. You guys, happy holidays. I hear it's snowing in Winnipeg, so everyone drive safe. Hello to Section 302 in the MTS Center, and God bless the Jets.
keep tweeting and keep taking pictures with your iPhone, Constantine, because, you know, I can speak for a lot of people. I was laughing hysterically over the last 3 days. You did an awesome job, and, you know, people already loved you, but people love you even more, so keep it up.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dean. Have a good one, buddy. That's Constantine. You might know him better on Twitter as @JetsXOXO, telling us the story. Really, it's really a remarkable story is what that
hilarious
is.
Hilarious.
Maddie Leibel, you can come in now here, Maddie. Happy Hanukkah, first of all, to you.
Oh, and to you guys. Yeah. First night is tonight. Are we all geared up?
We are all
where's
geared
the party?
Up.
What's your new address, Ezzy?
123 Fake Street.
And to you, Richie, as well, happy Hanukkah. I saw your mother earlier this morning at synagogue, and we were chatting. She should be tuning in right about now, which is excellent. Awesome. Yeah, which is good.
I got a text.
We were talking Hanukkah there, so it's wonderful. Are you guys excited?
Of course. We got some latkes, although I must say, haven't been invited to the to your grandmother's Hanukkah party
she
yet.
She has postponed it.
Oh, it's postponed.
Due to unforeseen circumstances, she'll be making, I think, what did she say, a party in the spring.
Oh, okay.
Hanukkah in the spring.
Can we, you know, as the first candle, can we take Drew's body and then put his head and light it on fire?
No, that would be inappropriate.
And that would be very painful. That would hurt me, in fact, is what that would do.
That would be
a real festival of lights, Richie.
Yeah. So you're going to be on after us. You and Rick are jumping on. Going to be doing 90 minutes or so?
I guess so, yeah. There's going to be an assortment of guys coming in between 3 and 6. I believe I'm on from 3 to 4:30 with Rick. Maybe Jay and Troy will be in after that. We're going, till 6 o'clock here? That's when people can bring in their toys and donations,
right? You have until 6 o'clock to bring in your new unwrapped toy or a cash donation here for the 30th annual Christmas Miracle. Remy, you want to go to... Let's go to Cheers and Jeers and wrap the show up.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And Jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezzy Ginsberg, Cheers or Jeers?
Well, we're here at Saint-Vitale Center celebrating the Christmas Miracle toy and cash drive, so I'm going to cheer the Saint-Vitale Center for having us and everybody who's putting this on, everybody at the station. It's obviously great this time of year to donate money and toys to those less fortunate, so that's an easy cheer for me.
Well put. Richie, got one?
Well, JetsXOXO gets my cheer 100%. He made the entirety of the craziness that happened on, I guess, Wednesday and Thursday it was, or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whenever it was, hilarious. And, you know, we can't take all this stuff too seriously.
Yep.
And it provided a little bit of levity, and I thought it was much needed at that time, and kudos.
I have a quick cheer. I'm going to cheer Ron Hainsey just because that's probably the last cheer he'll ever get from the city of Winnipeg.
That's a good line. I like that.
Poor Ron.
And I'll wrap up Cheers and Jeers. I'm going to cheer Boston College head coach Jerry York. He's tied the all-time NCAA wins record, likely to break it. If he didn't break it yesterday, don't have the results, he'll break it later on this month. So I'm going to cheer Boston College head coach Jerry York on tying the all-time NCAA wins record. That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday afternoon. A big thank you to Jamie McLennan of TSN for joining us. A big thank you to Ray Ratto of CSNBayArea.com for joining us. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. It's also going to be available on TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website for the latest NHL, CBA, Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. For producer Remus back at the studio, for producer Colin here live on location, for Maddie Leibel to my right, for Ezzy Ginsberg to my left, for Richard Pollock to my far left, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You still have time. Come on down here and donate to the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive live at Saint-Vitale Center.